Welcome into a new Buff Stampede Radio. Adam Munster Tiger, the publisher of BuffStampede.com, joined by William Gardner. You had a chance to sit in on our earlier spring ball previews. On everybody around here is calling this the main event now.
Yeah, I don't know. I think they're having fun with me. But it's kind of weird for me because I'm used to sitting at my desk at home looking at you and the camera over there.
Yeah, now, yeah.
There's the camera. There's you. And these guys are all seasoned performers in front of the microphone. And I'm usually sitting in, well, I won't say what I'm sitting in, but I'll call it a chair. Sitting in my chair at home.
Well, you're doing well so far.
All right.
So recently, we went on a double date, William.
Yeah.
We got our wives together.
Yeah.
What was the recap on your end?
I think we had a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah. I think me and your wife did all the talking, and you and Kathy didn't say much. So.
Well, you were sharing great stories from your military history, and I was just, they say you learn more when you listen, right? And so it was good. I enjoyed, there were even some stories, we've known each other for a couple decades now. There were some stories I had never heard from you before.
Yeah, we'd never gotten into any of that stuff before. Some of the military, you know, 10 years in the Marine Corps and the Navy, and then I think we talked about some of my cases at work and things that were going on. I think I just finished some big trials, and so I was kind of worn out and a little bit beat down.
Well, spring ball is around the corner.
Yeah.
There wasn't as much excitement leading up to those 15 practices before, but now with Coach Prime, and we expect the spring game to be a big event, it's kind of almost a little mini season in and of itself, and so many new guys in the program the last couple springs that it makes it a lot of fun and a lot to really discuss. But it's going to be this evolving thing throughout spring ball. Like last year, there were guys we would have written off that
right.
performed, and
right.
vice versa. Sade Traore, we were over the moon about
right.
last spring, and then he didn't fit in at all.
Yeah, and Reagan Upshaw didn't do much here. Goes to Arizona and one of the sack leaders.
Taylor Upshaw, yeah.
Yeah, right. What did I say, Reagan?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, one of those Upshaws. Gene Upshaw for the older folks out there. But, I think it'll be the same this time around. I think that part of the fun of this, what's going on with Prime, is that it's sort of brand new. And one of the things I used to look forward to in spring was seeing some of the younger guys get an opportunity to do something out there. Because a lot of times once you get into game planning for the season, you don't have time for those guys. So, you know, I think there always used to be surprise guys that show up in spring. And people would think, well, where'd that guy come from? And now there's so many new guys here, it's hard to know which ones to watch and look at.
Yeah. I'm going to put you on the spot. First day of spring ball, you're Phil Loadholt. What is your first team offensive line look like? Personnel from left tackle over to the right side.
Well, I mean, it depends on how he's going to do that, because that's always, you know, I think when you're coaching a team that first practice, sometimes you know who your guys are because they're all back from last year and they're all pretty good. But I think in this situation, I'm not sure that with him being brand new and being a brand new offense and so many new guys, I'm not sure there's an automatic way to do that. You know, so I don't know. Maybe he rewards guys who worked hard in the weight room or look good in the player-led practices or what have you. So I'm not quite really sure how he would do that. For me, I think there's I don't know. I think there'd be six guys. I think part of the problem for me is I don't know where any of these guys are going to land, okay? Because I think that everybody's plugging them into spots, and I don't think they're going to be in spots when all the dust settles, the spots where we think they are. Like, so who's going to be that number one center? You know, is it Yakiri Walker? Is it Hank Zielinskis? Is it Tyler Brown? I don't know, you know? I'm not sure Tyler's played enough center to be the guy who starts the very first play. You know, so I think I would say Savion Washington's probably going to be at right tackle because he played that. I think part of you kind of throw out a little bit who played last year because the offense is going to change significantly. So will it really matter? But I do think he's far more talented than people think he is. You guys talked a little bit about with the ankle and what have you, but he's got the length and he's got the ability. And when he's on his game, he's a really darn good tackle.
Yeah.
So, you know, going left from there, it's like, you know, when you talk about the guards, I mean, the guards are going to be radically different this year than what we had last year, which we had two. We had some undersized guys, some guys with not great length, and now you're talking about guys like Justin Mayers and Tyler Johnson, and you know maybe Khalil Benson, and some of these guys who are just massive and got you know size and length and what have you. So I don't. It's hard for me to say because I don't know what Loadholtz approach is going to be to how he names those first five starters. I think I would probably go with Yakiri Washington or Yakiri Walker off the at the number one at center just because he's got so much playing experience in game time. So you know he's going to be able to handle calls and all those kinds of things. He's got some experience. He's an older guy. You know, certainly looks big enough in the weight room so far from what we've seen. He's used to playing out there. I think I would probably go Savion Washington. I think I'm trying to remember who played what, where they were before. I think I would probably have Justin Mayers and Tyler Johnson at those guards. And I think I'd have Khalil Benson at the left tackle.
Okay. Not Jordan Seaton. Okay.
I'm not putting a freshman out there in his very first practice on college. He hadn't earned it, and he hasn't shown he can play. And I know everybody goes, oh, he's a five-star. Well, big whoop, you know. Until you get on campus and show that you can actually play at this level, it doesn't mean anything. So, for the first, you know, he's like, you know, one of the things that Prime was talking about when he visited a class on campus, and he's talking about, you know, you get these freshmen in here, they got to learn where the library is, they got to learn where the bathrooms are, how to get to class, all these other things. And it's going to be his first time ever doing a spring practice and coming out for a practice, and you got all those kinds of things that be swimming around in your head. And people probably think, well, that's easy, but it's not. It's a different thing. So I would not put a true freshman as a starting left tackle. I'd make him show me something before I did. But, you know, Phil Loadholtz coaching those guys, so who knows? And I think Loadholtz, you know, having played offensive tackle at Oklahoma and in the NFL, is going to know what he's looking for.
Yeah. So. And I, you did this too, and I had a hard time keeping Tyler Brown out of my starting five going into spring ball.
Right.
But we don't know where he's going to fit in. Right. And That'll probably work itself out, right? I mean, he's an interchangeable piece that can play if center works out for him, any of those three interior positions. And so I think Tyler Brown's going to get on the field and play in a lot of games this year. It's hard to peg him in as a starter right away.
Well, it's hard to know where he's going to play. And I think there's still question marks about Tyler. You know, I mean, you know, he was very effective at Jackson State. But can he move up to this level? We don't know because we haven't seen it yet. Whereas, you know, you take a guy like you got Tyler Johnson and Khalil Benson, who both played at this level last year and have shown they can play at this level. I think people tend to think Khalil Benson's going to be a tackle, but he's a guy that can play guard too. So, and then, you know, Justin Mayers, you know, that guy is one of the most physical offensive lineman I've seen in a long time. So how do you keep him off the field?
Yeah.
You know, so what they've done is they've got I just sort of wrote down the guys that jumped out at me, Savion Washington, Justin Mayers, Khalil Benson, Tyler Johnson, Yakiri Walker, Tyler Brown. Did you keep count on that? I'm not smart enough to count past.
I think
five.
You're at seven.
I think so. Not enough fingers. But you look at that, any one of those guys could be starters. And Hank Solinskas could be a starter because he's a lot better than I think people think give him credit for either. And then you got Jordan Seaton. So, you know, you're looking at seven or eight guys who could actually really play on this line. You know, I think it's intriguing, and I think he's got to figure out where they all fit in best. And sometimes that's your hardest thing as an offensive line coach, you know, especially at some of the lower levels where you just got to fill in spots with the best guys you can get. But even here, all of these guys have the ability to play at multiple positions. So, you know, sometimes you have to shift those guys. And, you know, I always go back to 2001, and that team wasn't the 2001 team we remember until they I'm trying to think back, Wayne Mercier, I think it was his name, would put him at center. And then all of a sudden it came together, you know. So we may see some growing pains through spring trying to figure out who belongs with each other and who fits best with each other.
And they're planning to bring in linebacker help through the portal in the spring. It sounds like another couple offensive linemen is going to be the plan as well. And now certainly that becomes a little clearer once you get through 15 spring practices, right, to see exactly how legit your depth is, you know, to that second and third line. Right. But right now it sounds like the plan is they're not done on the O-line.
Yeah, I don't think they should be. I think they should keep bringing guys in, you know. You know, it's interesting to me that Jack Bailey's still around. But I think you look at last year, he was clearly too small. And I think I remember saying that before we even had a first practice. It's like, well, that guy's not big enough. No, you know, every now and then you get a guy. Who was the center we had back at the beginning of the McIntyre years?
Alex Kelly?
No, the one that played 10 years in the NFL. Or maybe it was probably before McIntyre. Was only about 6 feet tall. Nobody got anything? I think he was still playing in the NFL up until just recently. I'm totally blanking on it. But I remember going to practice every all the time and thinking, man, that guy's little.
Daniel Munyard.
Yeah.
Finally came.
Yeah. And I remember being at practice and thinking, wow, that guy's just not big enough. And
you know, I love when this happens because I know people are listening to this podcast yelling it out. You idiots.
Guys, you're stupid, man. I thought you knew something, you know? Hey, I don't know. I'm 59. He's only 23, so he should be able to remember stuff. So.
Yeah, no, he didn't play much in the NFL, but Daniel Munyard carved out a nice little career hanging around practice squads.
Yeah, and, you know, you put in 10 years getting a paycheck in the NFL, you're doing something right. You know, believe it or not, as funny as it may sound, you're among the best football players in the world, even if you're not playing. Because you made an NFL team, so
yeah,
you know, you look at a guy who's maybe not the biggest guy, and center is the place you can play him. But you know, when you looked at Bailey and who was our other guard on the other side that played most of the time,
Will T.
Beebe is what
Beebe. Okay,
you know, and Beebe was a much more thick, but he didn't have length. He didn't have the arm length to be able to keep guys off of him. And I think that was apparent to me very early on. But you looking at the guys we have that are going to compete for playing time this year, and they're entirely different build of guys. You know, they're all 6'4", 6'5". They've all got those long arms. And more importantly, maybe, is they've got an entirely different mentality. And you see that in some of the weight room footage, you know, and they're, you know, whether you want to call it leadership or their attitude, or they've just got a chip on their shoulder, mm-hmm, you know. And I remember watching some drills in the summer last year, one-on-one, you know, kind of pass rush drills, and the defensive line's out there chirping and jawing and pushing people around, and the offensive didn't step up and say anything back. And I thought, we got a problem, you know, because if you don't have the attitude to fight back and stand your ground, and you can't, you know, jawbone with you know, Bishop Thomas and some of those guys, and you know, probably don't belong out there. And the only guy that would give it back was
David Connor, right?
Yeah, David Connor. Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Yeah. You know, and then he had one arm in a sling, so they're giving him a hard time. Not much you could say when you got one arm in a sling. Yeah. You know?
That's a good segue to a very random question. We know that Dan Lanning is high on your hate list.
Wow.
I believe it.
Yeah, I told you it was a setup.
You're talking about one arm here. If you can use one arm to swing on anybody in the history of the world, who is it?
Hey, don't we have other questions to get?
Yeah,
to?
We do.
I was still working on
we
that.
We do.
We got other things to do here. It's like, but you know, now you're telling me it's the whole history of the world, and I was like, geez, I'm not much of a human being if I don't pick Adolf Hitler or somebody like that, right? I mean, geez.
I was just trying to fully go in discovery mode in terms of, is Dan Lanning, like, if he's number one on that list, then it's a whole different scenario here.
Yeah, I think if I you know, sat down and kind of worked out a list, he might not make the top 10 if we're going on that criteria.
Okay.
You know, if we go all the way back, you know, as I was thinking about it just now, I'm thinking about some guys I used to know that played for CU back in the day that, you know, might you know, need some knuckles in the teeth as well. But and then some of the people, you know, I'm going to say, you know, given my current job, but I probably should just stop right there and we'll move on to the next.
Obviously,
subject.
We're joking here, but yeah, no, yeah. I needed to make sure that wasn't.
If I found myself at the dark horse. In the bathroom, and Dan Lanning was in there, and if there was a deadbolt lock on the door, it might get locked.
All right, we'll leave it there. Let's go to the defensive side of the ball. First day of spring ball, we Colorado doesn't have BJ Green on campus yet.
Right, right.
What does that front seven look like?
Well, Shane Cokes is playing, and I don't give a damn what anybody says, and I think that he gets some beef on the Stampede board. But he's a good player, and he really did a lot of things last year. He just didn't get stats. So what I saw a lot of times was, you know, when Dominic is getting a sack, it's because Shane Cokes messed up the blocking scheme, and that gave him a one-on-one opportunity. Okay, now Shane Coates got double teamed, and so Dominic didn't, and he got the sack. So that has value in and of itself, and I think with some of the defensive linemen that we're bringing in this year, that we're going to free up Shane Coates to play in a situation that he's far more suited for. So Shane Coates is going to be on the field. The guy I want to call the Volkswagen Beetle is going to be on the field. Josiade Nwankwo, and
he's the one that takes the spot that Shane Cokes played.
And I think they played. You know, Shane Cokes had to play out of position at that spot, and I think also, we didn't have enough guys last year to really let Shane Cokes be what he needs to be, which is more of a utility guy and play a five, more of a five technique. Or, you know, an outside three rather than that one technique or the nose. But Chidoze Nwankwo is a guy you put over the nose and you forget about him and you just fill in the rest of your spots because they couldn't block him in the Big 12 last year. They're not going to be able to block him this year. So that's a given. I think Amari McNeil, and I'm gonna keep that name on the table because I'm going to come back to it for one of the other questions.
Okay.
So Amari McNeil is going to be one of the starting guys out there, you know, for the first practice to me. And again, you know, we got so Sal's back, you know, right?
It doesn't sound like he's going to be there for spring ball.
Okay.
Right now, based on, unless we get an update, it sounds like Damian Lewis would most likely step in and do that.
Yeah. Which sometimes I hear Damian Lewis and I think about the guy from Band of Brothers, the actor.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like, oh, Damian Lewis, huh? Well, he was pretty good as an airborne ranger, so, yeah. But
Did you happen to catch the speech that Damian Lewis gave the team? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I had to excuse myself from the room for a minute. I was like, yeah, okay. That's what I've been looking for is that kind of a you know and you know I just wrote down some of those things and I'm like, you know, I can't repeat them in polite company, but I don't get around polite company all that much, so it's all good. But that's what I'm talking about. That's the kind of mentality that a defensive line has to have, is you can't let anybody beat you, man.
Mm-hmm.
You can't let anybody punk you. You can't let anybody, you know, and frankly, what's been missing on the offensive line at CU for about 15 years is that attitude too. Is, you know, somebody, I don't know, you know, somebody takes out your best player on a cheap shot in the Colorado State game, and somebody doesn't get taken out. That offensive line should all be fired. Your quarterback gets knocked around the way Shador did last year, and nobody seemed to have any concern about it. Man, I don't know. You know, I might start the freshman and see. It couldn't do worse, but. What I like, you know, in the weight room that we're seeing in practice now is the attitude on both sides of the ball, you know, and it's going to help that offensive line to have some of these guys on the other side, you know, to have and Amari McNeil to have some guys come in and show him, you know. And I think another guy to keep an eye on is Torian Carter, who comes in from Arkansas, you know, has got that size as well. So I think if we're talking, we're thinking probably like a 4-3.
Yeah,
I think we're kind of guessing a little bit at what we're going to see from Livingston. But if we're talking a 4-3, I think we're probably looking, you know, Shane Cokes and I think we got a pretty solid two deep inside with McNeil and Carter and Cokes and Nwankwo, and then Okunloli. You got to figure it's going to be one of the edges, and without BJ Green there, I think Arden Walker, and then Anquan Barnes is kind of the question mark guy. And you know, let's see if he didn't get on the field at Alabama because there's so many really great players there, or is there something missing from his game?
Today's episode is brought to us by Macaulay Capital Fractional CFO Services.
If you are running a successful small to medium-sized business, you have an impressive set of skills. But as your company grows, you face new and different challenges. When you eclipse $3 million in revenue, you likely have a whole new set of financial challenges. Are you looking for financial guidance and support but don't have the resources to hire a full-time CFO? Well, we have the solution for you, hiring a fractional CFO from Macaulay Capital. A fractional CFO can work with businesses on a part-time basis, providing the same expertise as a full-time CFO at a fraction of the cost. You get the benefit of having a seasoned financial expert on your team without the commitment or expense of a full-time hire. We love to help your business thrive by improving its profitability and eliminating your financial headaches. Get a long-term partner you can trust to help craft your financial strategy, understand the profitability of each client, help manage your cash smartly so you can take advantage of rising interest rates, and more. It's likely that a partnership with Macaulay Capital will be a win-win situation, meaning that your business will make more money from the guidance of a fractional CFO than the total cost of partnering with Macaulay Capital. For more information or to set up a meeting, visit MacaulayCapital.com or email CFO@MacaulayCapital.com. That's MCCAULEY Capital.com.
And I think there's a lot of question marks on the front seven, because starting with the question mark of you know, what is Robert Livingston going to do with this team? And it sounds to me, from what I'm hearing, you know, that he would be a more aggressive guy in the front seven, maybe, and, you know, bring guys from different places and off the edge and what have you. I think you've got some options out there when you get B.J. Green in here. You know, if you got B.J. Green and Okanlola on opposite ends from each other, and then you've got a guy like Arden Walker, who really showed some things last year, who can also give you some of that pass rush stuff in it as well. And, you know, N'Keal Webb-Walker, what's he going to do? You know, he's certainly got that size and length and athleticism. So there's some guys out there that you can play around with. I think that, you know, everybody has some concerns about the inside linebackers, but I think they will all benefit tremendously from having a much more stout defensive line up in front of them. And then they're going to have to learn how to take better angles. And, you know, people got used to seeing Nate Landman. And Nate Landman wasn't taught. That's a guy who just had instinct for the game. And it was remarkable to watch him. And he'd be looking. And if you'd had a camera behind the offense and you just focused on his eyes, you'd see that he probably just made instantaneous decisions. And he would make it. And what I would say is not enough information, but clearly it was for him. So, you know, I read a really cool article one time talking about how really good middle linebackers, some guys who really excel at it, have ADD, and because they process a lot of information in a different way than other people. Because playing that middle linebacker spot is kind of like standing on I-25 and you got all those cars at you, and you got to figure out how to get between them and make a play, you know. So if we can find some guys who can do that and do a better job, you know, looking, because what, you know, traditionally what you're teaching an inside linebacker to do is look through the guards at the backs, okay? And you can't focus on one or the other because they'll fool you. You know, they'll pull a guard and run the other way, or they'll do a counter and step this way and go this way. If you go with that step, now you're a step behind. And so one of the things you can do on defense is scheme for your defensive players to have gaps, and they just play those gaps. But if you've got a guy like the Hammer, like Landman, you can let that guy play in the middle, and now you can let other guys do other things. And it really gives you some options as a defensive coordinator that you don't have without a guy like that.
There were some moments from Vonta Bentley in the second half of the season where you saw quite a bit of potential from him, but he's going to have to fight this spring. He's really going to have to fight this summer, because we've heard that that's going to be a priority with transfer recruiting. But I'd feel comfortable with him being one of those starting linebackers going into the season.
Yeah, I feel like they say the old saying is the light started to come on for him. And you know, they talk about in baseball when the game starts to slow down and the ball, you know, and hitting and things like that. But it's the same in the middle of a defense. When you start to get it and you start to understand the defense and what your role is, and you start to understand the offenses that you're playing, and you can think less and just play more. And I think that's what we started to see from him. I'm not sure we had a cohesive theory of what our defense was last year, to me at any rate. I'm sure our defense coordinator did, Kelly, but when I watched him, it wasn't clear to me what our identity was. you know, so I don't think that that helped our inside linebackers. I know a lot of people, you know, are questioning our linebacker coach, and I don't know. I think that's legit until we see something better happen. But getting more talent in here is going to be, you know, the number one answer.
Is there a position battle that you're most intrigued by going into to spring ball?
Well, I think I kind of alluded to it earlier. The whole offensive line, to me, is going to be a position battle. You know, people are focused on center and right tackle, and everybody's written. You know, I think left tackle is going to be a battle. I don't know that a true freshman is going to be ready. We'll see. You know, I mean, you know, certainly you saw it happen at Alabama and places like that. You know, and when you started left tackle as a true freshman at Alabama, it means you're damn good because you didn't beat out a chump, right? And so who's the competition at left tackle right now for Jordan Seaton? You know, is it Khalil Benson? You know, Savion Washington doesn't look to me like he's a guy that can switch sides. And it's funny sometimes, and I'd have to stand up and demonstrate, and it would look really funny for me to be trying to do pass sets and everything. But when you're dropping your right foot and leading with your left hand, and then you switch to the other side, some guys can't do it. It's remarkable. Some guys, and I've had guys that are phenomenal offensive linemen and really good athletes, and they just couldn't switch sides, and they just couldn't get their brain.
Well, it's like some people are more ambidextrous than others, right?
Right. And so I think some guys are more fit for those positions, and center's the same thing too. Because so one of the problems I always had when I was trying to find a center is some guys snap and then they step, and it may only be a half a second difference, right? But in that half second, a guy like Chidozie Nwankwo is going to take a step and a half and rip your head off and give it to your mom in the stands, and she's not going to be happy, and nobody's going to be happy. But other guys, the really good centers, can snap and step at the same time. And it's easier, frankly, in run blocking, I think. You know, you're snapping the ball backwards and you're moving forwards, and it's generally not ever straight ahead. But, you know, and then you try to snap backwards and pop up in pass protection, and that's a whole other skill. And some guys just can't do it. And that's what I'm curious about Tyler Brown. Can he do it? I don't know. You know, we've seen enough. Well, we haven't, but, you know, if you watch some films of Connecticut, you see enough from your Kerry Walker to know he can do it. And he's damn good at it, and that's his game, is that quickness, you know, and that leverage and getting underneath guys. Hank Zielinskis is a little bit different than him as a center, but I thought he was very effective last year as a true freshman, being thrown in before he was ready and playing in the middle. And it's easier, frankly, to have a guy with the talent of a Jordan Seaton play a left tackle than it is to put a center in, because, you know, the guys you're facing in the middle of a defensive line are animals, you know. And not that you're not facing guys on the outside who don't have speed and what have you, but it's not quite the same as having, you know, if I was doing our interview right here, that would change your game a little bit, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah.
I'm already thrown off.
Right? So. Yeah. I know.
Okay, so we've talked about position battles, and now I want to know, do you have a sleeper on this roster going into spring ball?
Yeah, I think there's several guys, and it kind of depends on how you define sleeper. If you're going to talk about guys that nobody's brought up, like today, for example, Taj McCoy's the guy. Tajay McCoy at defensive end.
Okay.
I think both last summer, and, you know, we didn't see him during the season, but I think he's a guy who's a gifted pass rusher and can really do some things. And with B.J. Green not here this spring, that gives him an opportunity to get some more reps and some playing time. I think Arden Walker's another guy who's a sleeper based on some of the things I saw from him last year. I think Hank Zielinskis is a sleeper because I think he's better than what people think he is. And I think sometimes, you know, people you know, it's not just football, but I think we tend to downgrade what's close to us, you know. Like, you know, I've lived never all my life, never went to the Mint, right, to do the tour of the Mint, because it's always there. And so Hank Zielinskis, well, he played at Cherry Creek, how good can he be, right? Because I could have watched him in high school, and it's just sort of that human nature. But I think he's a lot better player than people think he is. So I think he's one of them, you know. And then, you know, Trevor Woods, a linebacker, intrigues me. And you know, I heard you and Chase talking about him. He's not, you know, for modern day football, he's not undersized for an inside linebacker. He's a little bit smaller than, you know, but we're not talking about the days when everybody was 235 and 240. Now you're talking about guys 210, 215 who can run. You know, so let's see him get a whole spring of practice at that position and have an opportunity to know what he's doing. And, you know, it's kind of curious that the analogy that comes to my mind is Florida State when Prime played there, right? And they took a Derek Brooks from safety, where he's an average speed guy, and they move him up to linebacker, and all of a sudden he's the best linebacker in college football, right? Now, I'm not saying that's going to happen with Trevor Woods, but, you know, that's the kind of intriguing thing that you want to watch and see what happens this spring. So I think we've got a lot more weapons at every position this spring than we did last spring. And I think, you know, I think one of the things we saw last year that's going to be the question mark this year is, can we get that team chemistry and get them to play together? And so far what I've seen, you know, on the field and in the workouts and such is much more promising. It seems that there's more leadership out there. And I think it's hard. You know, last year everybody's brand new, and it's hard to be the leader when you're the brand new guy on the field. And this year they got a lot more guys coming back, and it's easier for those guys to kind of be leaders than to be the new guy. I don't even know where the bathroom is, but I'm going to tell you what to do. So, you know, and some guys are built that way, and other guys aren't built that way. Shadur's not wired that way, and that's all right. You know, he's not that vocal field general kind of guy, but he's got a different thing that he brings to his game. So what we need is those guys up front on the offensive line. You know, we used to always have that, like, you know, I think back to the 1990-91 season, and Joe Garton was that guy. You know, Bill Coleman was our starting left tackle, was that guy. You know, and remember one year they were debating team rules. The team was going to set their rules, and you know, could we go up to Tulagi's for ladies' night? And they're –
Where is this story headed?
Well, this debate was going back and forth, and Bill Coleman stood up and said, if any of you sons of bitches think that the Big A championship is not important enough to you for you to miss Ladies' Night, get the hell out now. And that was it. The debate was done. You know, this guy had been going into his fourth year as our starting offensive tackle, and he stood up and he put it in those terms, and that was it. What were you going to say? So you need those kinds of guys. Where do you think that was going to go, that he went up to Tulagi's and beat the hell out of somebody?
With you, William, I never know where it's going. But kind of along those lines, on the other side of it, David Bakhtiari, when he went pro, said, I had a great time at Colorado, but my teammates were not invested the way I was. They were going out all the time.
So
it does matter.
Right. And you bring those guys, and you know, part of that is the head coaching mentality, and I think that's you know, Mike McIntyre didn't have that personality, and Bill McCartney sure as heck did, you know, and so he was bringing in guys who were going to have that winning, firing mentality, you know, who won in high school, they were used to winning, and it's not good, it's not enough to just be a great talent. You got to have a burning need not only to play the game, but to be great at the game and want to win, you know, and you got to hold your teammates accountable. And I'll tell you another story from back in those days. And you guys were talking about what was your favorite pre-prime moments. And I'm thinking, well, geez, in 1986 when we played Nebraska and we hadn't beaten them in 20 years. And then I'm thinking, oh, yeah, nobody else in the room was alive then. That's okay. But one summer, and, you know, guys didn't all stay on campus in the summer back then, you know, and so, but a lot of them before that 1989 season when we went undefeated, a lot of them did for the first time, you know, and part of it was because Sal was sick and everybody wanted to stay there with him, but we had had a disappointing season, you know, disappointing in our minds because it was 8-4, and we wanted more than that, and everybody stayed around, and I remember all out there running in the stadium one day, and it's hot, and Alfred Walker had been All-America, right? And he dropped out. And Eric Bieniemy, you know, who literally half the height of Alfred Williams, immediately ran over there and got, I couldn't say he got in his face, he got in his navel. And if you know Eric Bieniemy at all, you know how this went. And he said, look, motherfucker, if you don't want to be on this team, get the fuck out, because we can win without you. We don't need you. If you don't want to run with the rest of us, get out. And then Alfred Williams, because he's a competitor, he went off, and they almost had to peel him off each other. But Eric Bieniemy showed that leadership, and then Alfred Williams showed that he had that desire too, and he wasn't going to be pushed around and told he wasn't carrying his weight. So you've got to have those guys that push each other. And, you know, I go back to my time in the military, and all the really elite units, whether it's football or military that I've ever been with, are that way because nobody wants to be the guy who's the reason we didn't win. It's not going to be me. You know, we may not succeed in this mission. We may not win this game, but it's not going to be because of me. And you have to have that. So I think we got a lot more of those guys on this team this year. And I think it was a little bit of a wake up call. And I'm sure this is not a surprise to Coach Prime. I'm sure he's seen it even in the NFL that some guys don't have that fire. Mm-hmm. And you saw, and you know, our worst game last year was when he was sick. And he didn't have the energy, and then the team played the way he clearly looked and felt, right? And it looked to me like he got frustrated trying to find that in those guys. So he went out and got guys to have it this time around. You know, he went out and got a guy like Nwankwo, who's I got a chip on my shoulders. Well, I played last year. People say I can't do it because I'm too small. I'm gonna show you. Okay, and he went out and got a bunch of those guys. He got a bunch of those guys on the offensive line, and you know, and it's preservation of his genetic line, I guess, with his son playing quarterback, and he went out and got some guys who have that need to win, and you got to have that, and that I think that's what we've been missing, and so I think that's one of the big things that we're going to have that's going to and when you got a bunch of guys that all want to win. The chemistry takes care of itself because you work together and you pull together. So I don't know. That's
great stuff.
Yeah. What was the question? I knew
we got
question.
We got two F bombs out of it. What was the over under set at?
Three.
So if you but when, just hold it together.
But I was quoting somebody. I don't think it counts when I'm quoting somebody. You got to quote accurately, right? You guys are journalists. You got to quote warmly and accurately.
It's 2.5, and I had three. So.
Oh yeah. It's got to be, you know.
It's got to be organic.
You're right, exactly. See, I was in the Navy and the Marine Corps, and you know, you couldn't get a sentence off if you had 10 words in a sentence. 5 of them had to start with the F. You know.
All right, William. It was good. It's always enjoyable to get a chance to do this in person. Usually we're over Zoom. But thanks to Chase Howell and David Talks Buffs and Sean Niehoff and William. This was a lot of fun. And we're going to have a ton to talk about once they get into these spring practices as well. So appreciate all you guys. Yeah. We got to get over to the Dark Horse. We're going to meet some BuffStampede.com subscribers over there. Do you go Jiffy Burger or what's your order there?
You know, I haven't been to the Dark Horse in so long, I've forgotten what they have.
Okay.
Yeah, it's been such a long
time. We'll update that on the next show. Yeah. So I appreciate you.
Yeah, because my second year at CU, I think I lived in Williams Village.
Okay.
Went there all the time. The wife said to me, what's the Dark Horse? And I said, what? Get the hell out. You don't... But
before you are sleeping on the couch, we'll end the podcast here, and we'll come back with more spring ball analysis. Thanks for tuning in.